This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are we doing?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. It's certainly good to hear from you.
Well, tell us what we're going to be talking about this afternoon. What have you got in the latest World Affairs Brief?
Well, actually, it was a slow news week. There was an awful lot of superficial and peripheral stories, nothing major breaking. Three of them I'll touch upon briefly. One is there was a Asia Times article claiming that President Bush was going to attack Iran in August. Laura Rosen came out with a rebuttal of that, and several other people have come out with a rebuttal. I'm not so sure that it really is a valid rebuttal. Certainly the president is still planning on attacking Iran, but I thought it was interesting that they would go to so much trouble to either plant a false story and then rebut it or do something to make it appear, or, it's as they say in the old saying, he protested too much. I think there's something behind this, and certainly we're not going to know until that attack actually takes place. But it appears that there's an awful lot of movement in the news of pressuring Iran, everywhere from attacking Condi Rice for not being hard enough on Iran, and of course she's actually just playing the administration role of going through the motions of diplomacy so that they can justify an attack on Iran. But I think the attack is still on, and it will change the entire perspective of the upcoming election when that happens. Of course, this dovetails, interestingly enough, with Scott McClellan's book defending his critical position of George Bush. He basically said that it was a propaganda campaign, that he went along with it. He saw plenty of things, but out of his so-called loyalty to the president, he didn't resign or say anything. Well, they know very well that a spokesman for the president can't say anything while they're still the spokesman for the president. But it would have been very dramatic had he resigned and said this is a fraud going on, and he did not do that. Like many military generals and high-ranking officers who disagree with the war, they speak out after their service. And I think if they really had the courage, it would do a wonderful thing for American people to see someone resign, as General MacArthur did over the war in Korea. We need more courageous people willing to take a stand when they're making all these big dollars rather than afterwards in retirement.
Well, Chris, I think with a lot of our military officers, they're given very, very plush jobs. There's Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez in his book tells about how he was called in by Rumsfeld as he was getting ready to retire. He's a three-star general. He holds very strong feelings about what happened, and they were afraid he was going to speak out. So they offered him a very well-paying job, a very good-paying job at the Pentagon. And, of course, he knew it was a bribe, and he just refused to take it. But, of course, this is what they've done with a lot of the generals. They're on the payroll, and so they're still not going to speak out even after they've resigned their commissions.
And not only that, of course, they have many, many high-paying jobs with industry that are offered to them.
Right.
They're to become lobbyists and many other things. And they know that if they take a position, those positions will disappear. You've got to be a team player because they're being hired essentially because they have access. And once they've burned those bridges to the White House, they don't have access anymore.
Right. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment here with Joel Skousen as we explore really what's going on behind the scenes. Is there a plan to attack Iran? I rather think there is, and everything I get from my sources, which are not the greatest in the world, but there's some people there who know what's going to happen, and they're telling me that there is going to be a war with Iran. Let's hope and pray they're wrong. We'll be back in just a moment here with Joel Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and of course we were going over the news for this week, which is going to appear in the weekly World Affairs Brief, which Joel publishes. And the opening story was the very real possibility of a war with Iran sometime before George Bush leaves office, and of course going right along with Scott McClellan, formerly press secretary for the president, who's recently, just a few days ago, released a book saying the war with Iraq was not necessary. The war with Iraq wasn't necessary. That the Bush administration used propaganda, a program to get the people behind the war. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, you've been manipulated. And then, of course, rather than saying the president lied, Scott McClellan said he just shaded the truth. He just shaded the truth, and he doesn't mention a million people have died and how many of our boys over and above the 4,700 we hear about, how many others have died as a result of their service over there. Believe me, everything is being covered up, and when you say somebody's shading the truth, sure sounds like a lie to me. What do you think, Joel?
Well, more euphemisms, of course. This is part justification for Scott McClellan, trying to cover for the fact of why he didn't resign. So he was saying, well, I trusted the president, I had my loyalty to the president. And he says, you know, 3 or 4 years later, I was snookered. And that's how he's kind of putting this. Obviously, the White House and all the former press secretaries are mounting up an attack in favor of the president and trying to defend against McClellan's revelations. The Democrats are having a ball, you know, saying, we told you can't trust this president, and that only accentuates it. Hillary Clinton says, why, we need a new president, and that president should be me now. But I was just reading another article on her involvement in the Mark Rich pardon scandal, and it's interesting that Jeffrey St. Clair has come out with a major piece. I don't know where he got this insider information. It's just like he was talking to the horse's mouth. All the insider dealings with Rich, he had a tremendous amount of information coming forward. It's too long for me to publish in the World Affairs Brief, but it's a dramatic piece. The only thing that he's really missing, and, you know, that's why I always wonder about people who have inside sources. And believe me, you have to have inside sources to tell all that he knew about the relationship between Denise Rich, the Clintons, and Mark Rich, and all of the shenanigans he went through to get wealthy. But the sources, of course, weren't telling him the key truth, which was that Mark Rich helped...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and Joel's just talking about Mark Rich. You remember, of course, Mark Rich was one of those people who was pardoned, just as, of course, Bill Clinton was leaving the White House, along with a lot of other people who had big bucks and put it up and bought their pardons. And, of course, Mark Rich, I think it was his wife who'd given, I don't know, $100,000 or $150,000 to the Clinton Library. Wasn't that nice? And then immediately her ex-husband gets pardoned by the president. Now, anybody who doesn't think that there is... You know, that there is a relationship between the large financial donation and the pardoning of Mark Rich, I think it really doesn't understand. This is the way things work in Washington, D.C. And, of course, they do not go after the politicians. This is why we say we have the finest politicians that money could buy, and certainly Bill Clinton was among them. Since he got out of office, and they left the office, he and Hillary were broke. They were head over heels in debt, and they've accumulated $109 million since that time. He must be an awfully convincing speaker. Go right ahead.
Well, actually, that was only part of the disinformation that they were broke. They had their secret bank accounts in Switzerland, which Mark Rich helped set up. And he was the insider dealer through his Israeli connections. And, you know, he got special favor from Switzerland. They wouldn't extradite him to the United States for prosecution during all of these years. And, you know, Switzerland has a pristine reputation as being the guardian of hard money and things, but it's actually a very corrupt country. It made a deal with the Nazis to hold their gold in exchange for, you know, not invading their neutrality. The Swiss have always dealt with the powers that be and given away a lot of things. And, you know, it's a protection racket. You know, we won't touch you and we'll let you become very wealthy if you protect us and give us secret bank accounts. And that's what they did for Bill Clinton. And Mark Rich was involved in that. It didn't come out in Jeffrey St. Clair's article. But it also told about all of the money which Denise Rich lavished. But now, Denise Rich was, there was no love lost between her and Mark Rich. She was divorced from him after an affair with another Italian gal named Russo. But she was paid off with multi-millions of dollars in her divorce settlement, and Mark Rich's attorney came showed up at her door when they weren't having any luck getting the pardon through the Justice Department and other things, and wanted Denise Rich, the ex-wife, to get through to Bill and Hillary because she had a relationship with them. And all of a sudden, you know, with suddenly no love lost between them, she started laying out over $1 million to the Democratic National Committee through various fundraisers, as you said, major contribution, over $100,000 to the Clinton Library, over 70-some thousand dollars to Senator Hillary Clinton's campaign, and she was really laying it out there, and sure enough, the pardon came off as was expected. But I think that there was more to it than just buying their way through this. Mark Rich is obviously an associate of the dark side of government, and weasels the way around between Russia, China, the European Union, and the United States, and this was a guy who had to be protected. He was throwing money everywhere he went, of course, greasing the way for Russian contracts and deals, gave many, many millions of dollars to Israel so that he had influence within the Israeli government, and that influence came back through the secret bank accounts in Switzerland. This is a very incestuous, evil world, Dr. Stan.
yes, it certainly is. It's a fallen world, you know, because of people that do not have, of course, the fear of God. That's a big problem.
That's right. And so a lot of the pundits have been talking about the fact that this is going, this book by McClellan is going to accrue badly to the McCain campaign, of course, who is piggybacking on top of the Bush legacy and defending the war in Iraq. He came out today and said, I still defend my position. I believed, the reason I went to war is I believe there was weapons of mass destruction there, and every intelligent person in the United States, many intelligence officers in the United States believe that too. Well, that isn't true at all. There are a lot of intelligence officers who have been silenced who knew that this, stuff was fabricated. At least some of it was fabricated. Obviously, there's others who knew that there were real weapons of mass destruction and that they were shuttled off in a Russian convoy over to Syria. And those were all suppressed as well. So the real story has never been told in that regard, but clearly this seems to be, to me, a book that has some, you know, I always have to be careful about when the government or people close to government come out and betray the government and kind of embarrass it and make it look bad. A lot of that is done, like the NBC photos of the Marine shooting an unarmed person, or the Abu Ghraib photos suddenly surfacing after being kept under wraps for many years. I often wonder when those leaks come out of government by approved sources, if they don't have an alternative agenda, almost a contrarian agenda, to try to make the U.S. look bad. And so sometimes we have to be careful not to assume that all leaks that tell the truth are for the purpose of helping and saving America. Oftentimes it is to contribute to the globalist objective to make America look bad, to make it look like the bully of the world, and so that it will increase the possibilities of Russia and China feeling that they have an excuse to attack us someday.
Well, I really think, of course, part of this is to disillusion the American people, and so they really begin to turn against their own government. And this is what happens, you know, always before there's some sort of revolutionary movement. But we should never, of course, lose confidence in America. It's simply that America's been taken over by wicked people. That's where the truth is. We still have the greatest country in the world. We just need to take it back from the wicked people, the dark side, as Joel says, who've taken control of the reins of government, both political parties, the media, many of our major corporations in our banking system. But these do not represent the American people, only a very, very select group. But go right ahead.
Well, moving on to another high-profile story, the Texas Supreme Court today finally ruled, and very rapidly, I might say, against the state of Texas, and they're taking away of the 460 children from the polygamous sect, the FLDS church. It was a resounding victory for the FLDS, who had long said, that, or their attorneys had long said, that they, the state of Texas violated all of the three tests of law that justify removing children from a family. They had failed to produce any documented cases of abuse. They had these children in custody for 2 months, and no one has been charged with an abuse crime yet. And the worst tactic, of course, was they resurrected some photo of Warren Jeffs, the ex-leader of the FLDS, who's currently in prison in Utah, an older photo of him showing kissing someone. And you can't tell what age the person is, but of course the state of Texas came out and said this is him kissing a teenage girl. And, you know, I'm not defending Warren Jeffs. There are other people who have said that he was someone who was guilty of abuse, and so it may well be true, but that shows you the weakness of the case of Texas when all they've got is photographs that they've scrounged from an illegal search warrant with no date or time posted on them, and they come out and use that in a media case to try to sway the public against something that they're losing. Where's the actual criminal indictments? That's what we want to see. I believe that there has been abuse there. But you can't judge the entire community based upon the sins of a few. And that's what the state of Texas is doing. And the state Supreme Court of Texas said that's absolutely wrong. You cannot paint the whole group based upon belief, based upon what you consider an atmosphere of abuse. You must find specific instances and prosecute those specific instances. I mean, are we to judge all Catholics because several hundred homosexual priests have abused the people and said this is an abusive atmosphere and no Catholic can have children? I mean, that's the same principle.
Well, how about saying, you know, that there's corruption in Congress, that we have Duke Cunningham and a couple of others have been taking money.
Put them all in jail.
Put all the members of Congress in jail. Well, maybe, no. But, I mean, it's just so absurd. And it's exactly what they did. And they knew, of course, what they were doing was illegal, but they wanted to get those children. They wanted to get their hands on the children because they get money from the federal government. This is what it's all about. And I think this was a large part of it. That, and of course, everybody, I think, to terrorize everybody because they can take their children, they can take your children too. So you better be quiet.
And you know what's interesting is that now the state of Texas is going to still use a delaying tactic to keep from giving the children back. They're claiming now that we will give you back when you prove that they're your children. In other words, they are requiring DNA testing for everyone. Can you imagine the arrogance of that? To have to go back into court and prove that through DNA that your children.
Well, of course, I think what you're really seeing is the fact that the other people in the child abuse industry in Texas have no respect for the law, which supposedly they're upholding, and they're violating the court orders. I mean, the Supreme Court has come up with this sort of a decision. What did the Supreme Court say? Did the Supreme Court say that children should be returned to their parents?
Well, it said that they must be reunited. But that would mean, in my estimation, that you take all of the children on buses and you take them right back to the ranch and let the ranch sort it out, but you take them back where you got them.
Right.
You didn't know who they belonged to when you took them. You take them back where you got them. It's not up to the state to determine that parents must prove the identity once they've been taken, illegally. Once it's illegal, you've got to restore them exactly as they were, and that restoration does not include an exact knowledge of which children belong to who. They're obviously trying to use the delay of DNA evidence to make sure that they can continue whatever prosecution that they might do in the future.
Well, I think when we have government agencies that don't abide by the law, why, we have a real difficult situation. But, of course, I don't think it's simply there in Texas. I think we have the same thing all across the country. What we need are moral people in our courts and moral judges. And certainly I commend the appellate court and the Supreme Court of Texas for doing what's right. But, of course, what are we going to say about the bureaucracy that says we don't care what the courts say? We have the children, and possession is 9/10 of the law. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen as we talk about so many of the things that are going on here that show America's really began to lose its soul. We'll go right ahead, Joel.
Well, as I predicted in the World Affairs brief, I think the Texas, state of Texas went too far. They got public opinion against them. And I'm not willing to go to bat for the justices in this case in any court of law to say that they are necessarily moral judges. But the state of Texas was so far afield on the law, there are very few judges that can stand up to attorneys who are required to abide by the law and with a straight face tell them and that Child Protective Services of Texas did the right thing when it was blatantly a violation of all the three criteria of what you have to show to take children away from the parents. So this was a victory for all Americans, not to be judged by unpopular beliefs that you may accrue as part of a group. However, we may disagree with the polygamous philosophy of this offshoot of the Mormon Church, and it is not the Mormon Church we're talking about, but a breakaway group who broke away many, many years ago over the issue of not willing to accept the Mormon Church's edict stopping the practice of polygamy, that they continue to do so. In fact, there are probably 50,000 people still practicing polygamy in states of Utah, Arizona, and Colorado. But we must not be judged as a group. There must be specific violations of law, lest we all meet an unpopular government or a government judging us for being part of an unpopular point of view. And that certainly could happen to all of us who distrust government nowadays.
Okay, fine. I certainly concur. So where do we go next?
Well, actually, in my World Affairs brief, I'm talking mostly about giving people some practical advice. How to adapt to high gas prices is impact the economy. There's going to be a lot of distortion in the economy. One of my lead stories today was the fact that Ford Motor Company was just about coming out. They were starting to make a profit, just coming out of the doldrums and starting to get back on their feet, and all of a sudden, their main business model, that is, your truck sales, as in most car companies, provides over half the revenue, is on the rocks. Nobody's buying large trucks anymore, and suddenly they want millions of small cars, and there's not enough production. And so this is a major disruption in an entire industry that cannot adapt rapidly enough to avoid near bankruptcy. Not just the loss of jobs that Ford has announced that they're going to let go involuntarily over 12,000 salaried workers. It's important to realize that it's not just the loss of jobs, it's the fact that this company cannot gear up to make the changes that the market has suddenly forced upon it with this outrageous example of price gouging that we've seen. You know, fuel prices going up 10 cents per gallon per week, Dr. Sand, and even higher in some places. The American consumers now being held hostage to an economic and personal lifestyle that was built on cheap gasoline, a lifestyle, frankly, that I don't think is ever coming back.
I think this is going to impact the trucking and everything that is carried by trucks. It's going to influence the airline industry, and we're going to see more and more of our major airlines either going down or going under government control. As I said, at least four airlines I know of have already gone under here within the last month and a half to 2 months.
Yeah, six of them.
Well, you go ahead. But, I think that people don't understand the enormity of the problem that we're facing today, and you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with all of our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel is just talking about the oil crisis. And believe me, this is an oil crisis. It's impacting on everybody's life. In fact, we have a little, we have an Amazon store. We've sold 50 copies of Lindsay Williams' book, The Energy Non-Crisis, since Tuesday. 50 copies, and this is just Thursday. And so you can see that people are really concerned about what's happening to the price of oil, and it's going to impact on every aspect of everyone's life. So you pick up the story.
Yes, it's absolutely true. My books on preparedness are also selling at a higher rate than ever. I think people understand that this thing is not getting better. This is very discouraging. And what's worse is most people have no ability to escape what is now upon us and getting worse. We're literally held hostage. We see the prices going up. And what can you do? Our cities are developed around a commuting lifestyle. was to allow Americans to live in rural or suburban openness, to escape pollution and city overcrowding. We travel long distances on fast freeways to get to work, and none of that can be changed quickly, even in decades. We never did like the European style of living, with millions crammed into high-rise city apartments, with gas prices so high that only the wealthy can afford a personal vehicle. But now it appears that the powers to be are about to force that urban lifestyle upon us. Mass transportation, high-density urban high-rise apartments, water rationing, zero-scape yards, runaway inflation. But my message is we have a duty to adapt and resist, and this week I'm taking time out because of a relatively slow news week to give some practical advice and tips to people on how to adapt quickly to avoid some of the pain.
I think one thing that's so important is to realize how important the price of fuel is as far as the price of food. Certainly, of course, fertilizer, it depended upon petrochemicals in part for, you know, their production. Certainly, the price of diesel fuel for the farmer, and he, of course, he's in a real problem because the price of fertilizers have gone up, you know, massively here in the last year. It's the price of the diesel has gone up that he uses to plow his fields with. And when the farmer gets to the point where he can't make enough money to make it worthwhile, he's just going to quit planting. And this could very well happen in the not-too-distant future. Be good right ahead, Joel.
Well, there's a lot of products, too, that are products of oil. You know, I was just helping a father-in-law to install a Trex deck, and that's made out of oil. All your plastics come from the oil industry, and all of that is going up in price. And obviously anything in the economy that must be transported is rising in price to reflect the cost of shipping. And every business that can is passing along their higher fuel prices to the consumer, plus a little extra, I've noticed. You know, when prices become unstable, Dr. Stan, or rise too rapidly, consumers lose their ability to judge what is a fair price. And a lot of wholesalers and retailers are taking advantage of that by increasing prices more than is necessary. And the result's going to be galloping inflation on many fronts, not just gasoline. You know, Business Week put out a warning this week that defaults on loans are not stabilizing as they should have been by this time, but they're actually getting worse. I think the fuel component in people's budget is causing many people who are living on the margin, that is, just on the verge of not being able to make it each month, are forcing them into default on credit card payments and on loan payments. Here's what Business Week said. Nobody was expecting an easy year for U.S. banks, but many observers thought the bulk of the industry's credit troubles would be over by the first quarter. Now it seems the rest of the year may be even worse. Case in point, a May 28th announcement from KeyCorp of KeyBank. Mounting loan losses with the regional bank company suggests the banking industry's troubles with bad loans are just beginning. The main culprit is the bank's portfolio of loans to residential home builders. Key Corporation said in the Securities and Exchange Commission filing that losses have increased on education loans and home improvement loans as well. So there's a lot of businesses that simply cannot adapt by raising their own prices to keep pace with fuel costs. Take the airlines, for example, as you mentioned. There's a lot of competition out there. And in an atmosphere of rising fuel costs, the airlines are looking for ways to raise revenues without raising fares directly. You know, one of the first big scams that's actually been taking place for quite a few years now was the promotion of frequent flyer miles. They oversold this benefit so that now you can hardly find a seat, even if you have thousands of frequent flyer miles. They just tell you, we have no seats available for frequent flyer miles on that flight. Delta and others played fast and loose with the fine print, and they told us that they could get a free seat for as little as 25,000 miles, but there were so few seats available that everyone was locked out of that capacity. Then they told you that for 50,000 miles they could find you a seat, meaning they simply instantly depreciated your free miles by 100%.
Well, of course, that's the way the game is played, Joel. You, first of all, you get people hooked on credit cards, you know, and you get all these benefits, and you don't pay hardly any interest on it, maybe 3-4%, and suddenly you wake up and you find you're paying 20%, 25% on your unpaid balance, 30% on your unpaid balance, and it doesn't take very long before 30% is real money. We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Stan, back here. Joel, you go right ahead. You know, the credit card business has been one of the greatest scams in the world, and they intentionally got people hooked onto credit cards, but now comes the day of reckoning.
Well, the frequent flyer scandal, of course, I believe is a real Ponzi scheme. I believe if you looked at all of the free miles that they've sold as a benefit, every single airline who has such a route would go bankrupt if all the frequent flyers redeemed their rightful value. And they play upon the fact that most people don't redeem their miles. I don't play this game anymore. I don't use credit cards that offer free miles. I just go for the 1% cash back credit cards like Discover, which was the first one. I use the cash to shop the internet cheap seats, which are no longer so cheap. But if you fly for business and get the free miles anyway, don't save them up, is my advice. Use them up any way you can, as soon as you can. Give them away to friends, but use them up. Someday the airlines won't be able to honor them, and they're going to be just like pensions and other things. They're going to back out of those obligations. Now, rising fares are inevitable, but no airline can afford to get out there ahead of the others in price. To raise prices would put them out in front as a high-priced airline, which could be deadly to business. And to lose market share is deadly when you have many competitors and are billions in debt. What the airlines do is raise fares for selected markets or unadvertised markets, like business travelers who typically book flights on short notice and get stuck with high prices. For the price-conscious occasional traveler, airlines keep offering the cheap seats, but only for booking in advance and during midweek when demand is lower. Watch out, however, the increased fees get you when you come and try to change those tickets. That's why the airlines long ago stopped allowing you to give or sell a ticket to someone else if you couldn't make the flight. You know, I always used to say, why is this? I mean, if I bought a ticket, why should I be able to give that ticket to someone else? They claimed it was a security problem, to change the name of it was just a way to make a certain percentage of tickets worthless when people can't make the flight. I don't know if you realize that even when people have bought and paid for tickets, a certain percentage never show up for the flights, never cancel, nothing, just don't show up. And they understand that. That's why they overbook flights. And those tickets are non-refundable. Now, using a different tactic, American Airlines started charging for checking even the first bag. So far, no other carriers have followed suit, and Americans suffering from the perception of being a leader in higher prices, which they can little afford.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. I'll go right ahead. You got 10 seconds.
Okay. We're going to see more and more shakeouts as the airlines continue to merge or go bankrupt.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a
moment.
Six-month
belly up last month.
Right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel is expressing his concern that many of our airlines are going to be in real financial trouble, certainly American Airlines, that is established, I think, after the middle of June. You're going to have to pay, I think, $15 to $25 for the first bag check through, and maybe $35 for the second bag. But that's not going to be very popular. I think they've been far better off just to raise the fees. But they wanted to keep their fees down. Now they're going to charge you for checking a bag through. The airlines are in real trouble, and I think we may very well lose what I think has been an excellent system here in the United States. And I think many of these companies are on the very, very verge of collapse because of the skyrocketing price of fuel. So go right ahead, Joel.
Well, the interesting thing about fare increases is the Internet has changed all of this dynamics of sales. And the reason that they have changed is that when you go to Travelocity or any of the other Internet sales order, they automatically price those things with the cheapest first. And you put in your schedule when you want to go, and you always get the lowest price available right out there. And so it isn't like you're calling up Delta Airlines and that's the only operator talking to you. You've got a broker out there who's giving you the lowest price, and those people, those fill up the only prices that get taken are people who have a particular affinity for an airline because of their frequent flyer program or something, and they'll pick United or American because they've got their frequent flyer program. But more and more people are getting so disenchanted with frequent flyer that there's no loyalty anymore to the brand, especially since they've stopped feeding you. They don't give you hardly anything. you're going to just competing with smiles, empty gestures, how you treat a little. There's nothing really a substantive to differentiate between the airlines anymore except, you know, and I'll tell you, if you sit on the airplane for 3 hours on the tarmac because of some delay caused by a maintenance problem, they don't give you another plane. That turns off so many people, they go to another airline. And so it's very difficult for them to raise prices because there's so much competition out there. It just puts you at the bottom of the list when people go on the internet to try to find a flight, and more people are doing that now. So they've really got a real problem. I don't think the merger between Delta and Northwest is going to offer much economy of scale, especially when there's so many union fiefdoms to protect in each airline. They're trying to maintain everything, all the perks that both airlines have promised their employees to make sure that they aren't hurt by the merger. And so if they aren't, if nobody's hurt by the merger, they're not going to be able to cut costs. Anyway, trucking has also been especially hard hit by the excessive rise in diesel prices. A lot of independent truckers get their hauls or their hauling contracts through brokers. I mean, when they get to the end of a run in California coming from New York, they don't want to turn around and drive empty back to New York. They call a broker and they say, have you got a lift, a ride for me? And those brokers negotiate rather fixed fees. And so the independent trucker accepts a freight at a certain fixed fee, but his fuel prices are going through the roof. I know a particular independent trucker who drives an awful lot, and his bill for fuel was $64,000 last month. That's got to come out of his profits. And if he was, you know, making $3,000 or $4,000, and usually they try to make even more than that in a month, that can easily be wiped out by an extra, $20,000 in fuel costs. They can't raise their rates easily because they're dealing with brokers. They don't negotiate directly with the person they're freighting for. So the fuel costs cut deeply into the profits, and many can't make the mortgage payments, and they go bust. And it's very difficult for them in today's rising prices to even do a massive trucker strike like they tried to do before, because there's no margins. They don't have any extra money that they can sit on while they're out of work for several weeks trying to do a strike. The auto industry is in a particular bind. It takes years to develop new vehicles, and while all manufacturers have small economy cars in their lineup, including hybrids, these vehicles have never constituted a large percentage of sales or profits. Pickup trucks have been the profit leaders for car companies for years, not cars. Now those days are gone, and companies have excess factory capacity, excess inventory, which can't be changed easily. The demand for heavy hauling vehicles will always be there among construction people and people who actually need them, but a lot of people have been buying pickups for recreation and for the occasional use. I might need a pickup someday, so I'm going to buy a pickup. These are the buyers, almost half of which are looking for other alternatives now rather than the pickup, and that's why pickup sales are down almost 40%. Here's a tip for the listeners. Put a trailer hitch in your car and use a light trailer for occasional hauling rather than the pickup, and then you don't have to go to that expense of buying a pickup. Ford was just beginning to turn around, as I said. It's losing business when high fuel prices killed its high profit trucks and SUV sales. And even Toyota has been gearing up, for example, with its pickups, getting ever bigger and bigger pickups to compete with the American pickups. And just as they were really breaking into that market, now the pickup line is dying, and their Prius line of hybrids, of course, is the top-selling economy car, despite a fairly hefty price tag, and they can't produce them fast enough for demand. So this is a problem that I foresee, is that the industry is not able to adapt very fast. Being on the margins of profitability as it is, does Ford have enough time to re-gear up for many, many more efficiency cars, super efficiency cars, and let go all of their factories and workers that they're building trucks with? This is a real problem. Think of what war would cause if we had an EMP strike and you lose all electricity in the nation and suddenly everything's dead for months at a time. Can you imagine how that's going to impact business?
And, of course, General Motors, I think, lost, oh, I don't know, $300 billion or so the first quarter of this year. And now, of course, they're strapped with all of these wildcat strikes. General Motors is having problems as well. The value of General Motors has fallen. I think the overall value is something like about $9 billion, the actual book value on this, which was once the major corporation in America.
Yes. Well, you know, long-term, as transportation costs become more expensive, I see the economic model, the current economic model of using faraway production coupled with cheap shipping, diminishing in favor of more local production. Now, you can't do that on all industries, but certainly it's going to even start to affect the feasibility of shipping things from China. It will take a while for that pendulum to swing back in this direction, but with increasing instability in the world, I believe that coming back to manufacture within our own country is inevitable.
Well, so one thing, though, is that the government has been giving the corporations that moved overseas special tax consideration, income tax consideration. So the corporate tax is minuscule or no corporate tax if you're in another country, and, of course, tremendous when you're here. And, of course, that's why have we done everything we could to encourage our major corporations to move overseas and move their manufacturing overseas? Doesn't make any sense if you want to support America, but if you have a different agenda, a different dream, different worldview, then everything that's going on makes sense. Well, I hope you're right. I hope that it is going to come back again, but they're going to have to change the tax structure and take away the special benefits for those who betray America and move overseas and take their jobs with them.
Well, you know, it is at least half of the reason for moving overseas was a better regulatory climate.
Right.
Less regulation on employees and costs of, paying that 7.5% Social Security tax on all your employee wages. That's a huge cost, Dr. Stan. And they don't have to do that overseas. That alone gives them a 7.5% advantage, cost advantage, over companies doing business here. Ultimately, I think the world will be a better place if we have a better balance in national and regional self-sufficiency rather than going for the worldwide low price only. Just-in-time inventories, as another example, are certainly more efficient than keeping large inventories, but utterly useless in a crisis when only stockpiling in advance will save a company. Keep that in mind if your listeners own a business that has a fragile supply line, is that you must stockpile, even though it isn't the most efficient way to use money, it is in the long term. Now, I have some practical suggestions about how to deal with this changing situation. If you have cars and trucks, you should take stock of what you own right now. If you have any gas-guzzling vehicles that you're making payments on, consider selling them now. Bad as the market is for used vehicles with poor gas mileage, and believe me, it's bad, it's not going to get any better. So one should try to sell now, because the longer you wait, the more and more the market is going to get glutted with people trying to sell. It's not going to get better. Keep in mind that there are still people out there who need cars or trucks with power and good towing capability. So if the vehicle qualifies as a heavy hauler, consider installing a heavy-duty trailer hitch so you can target that towing or construction market. Now, people who have older vehicles that aren't fuel efficient but are paid for, they may not have much market value in that vehicle. So they may not be able to sell it. They'll have to consider the trade-off of keeping the vehicle around. And what I suggest is you simply use it less, preserve its value for last day's scenario, but use it less. Even at today's fuel prices, it takes several years to see any economic gains from buying a new vehicle compared to keeping one that's already paid for, that you own outright. Now, on the downside for keeping the vehicle, the cost of keeping it maintained, insured, I suggest people remove collision and comprehensive on older vehicles, always keep liability, which is required by law, and always keep, in fact, increase uninsured motorist insurance. With the plethora of illegal aliens out there driving without insurance, almost a third of automobile accidents are dealing with uninsured motorists now. Of course, there's always the problem of finding a place to park it, if you're going to keep an older vehicle around that you can't get rid of. It's also recommended that you learn to do your maintenance, and this saves a lot of cost on older vehicles. There's a lot of used vehicles around in junkyards and things where you can get parts without having to go to the dealer. Now, all of these vehicles it's interesting that are non-fuel efficient were designed to put out more power than the need for cruising down the highway. And that excess power can be put to use by adding an aftermarket overdrive unit to your transmission and changing the top gear ratio to a higher gear ratio. Now, a lot of people shake their head and just realize, well, what do you mean by that? I mean that when you're driving down the highway in your vehicle, your car's power curve is designed so that you can tromp on the accelerator, whip out, and pass everyone. And that means that your car is running on a fairly moderate gear ratio. To get maximum gas mileage, you need a much higher gear ratio so that it brings the RPMs down with that engine. These engines have excess power. They can handle lugging the engine a little bit along the highway, and you can increase your gas mileage 20 and 30% with a higher gear ratio. There are many dealers around the nation. You can find them on the Internet that deal in large overdrive units that actually bolt onto your transmission. And a lot of these are designed so that they can give what they call underdrive for super passing power. You can actually lower the gear ratio. You can flip a switch and raise the gear ratio for increased gas mileage. These will pay for themselves in about a year, given the cost of gasoline increases. Even high-efficiency cars can benefit from higher final gear ratios. Volkswagen transmissions, for example, a lot of mod shops who do modifications on cars have different gear ratios, which can be dropped into one's transmission. They cost in the neighborhood of $300 to $400. And those will save lots of money. So there's lots of aftermarket options on there that people can consider if they'll do some searching on the Internet. Now, also the way that people drive can save up to a whopping 40% on gas mileage. Now, that may seem to be, you know, you talk about these little gimmicks that people sell, too good to be true, whether it's water injection or magnets on the fuel lines. Forget about that. There's one major thing that people can do to get better gas mileage, and that is, instead of always passing trucks, if they're just getting behind a truck 2 to 3 car lengths away and motor along behind a truck, it's amazing. You almost have zero wind resistance with that. And gas mileage can skyrocket up to 40% more. I've seen cars that normally get 20 miles per gallon go to 30 miles per gallon if they drive behind the big trucks. And big trucks move along at regular highway speeds now. One has to be careful, of course, not to get too close. We're not talking about something that's dangerous here. 2 to 3 car lengths gives you enough time to stop. Trucks don't stop fast anyway, but it's amazing what will happen. Another thing that can be done is when you go down long hills, people can coast down those hills. I'm not talking about just taking the accelerator or gas, but taking it out of gear. Now, that's illegal in some states. But it's actually a very safe procedure if you've got still full braking capacity. But you go to 200 miles per gallon on the portion that you're drifting down a hill. I can actually get better mileage, Dr. Stan, and I've tested this on several trips, going over mountains than I can on straight and level ground. And the reason is the percentage of extra fuel you take your car up the hill is only about 10 to 15% more. But you get double the mileage going down.
That's a good thought. I hadn't even thought of it. Go ahead.
And so the other solution, of course, is just to drive slower. You get your best mileage on flat land by either slowing down to 45 to 55, not 55 to 70, but 45 miles an hour is almost optimal gas mileage for most cars in high gear. But you can actually get much more than that, what we call drafting a truck or something, driving behind a truck, or even 3 or 4 cars that are going along in a row. They tend to move the air along with a big parade of cars, and if you're within 2 to 3 car lengths behind that, you get a tremendous boost in the fuel mileage. Now, I have some cautions about this. Do not use this technique in bad weathers, low visibility when road conditions are not optimal. This technique is also not for drivers who are too old or slow in their reactions. It's also a bit more stressful to drive like this, as your eyes have to stay focused on the vehicle in front to alert to any sudden stop. But in any case, it is very effective, but one must be careful. Now, as for new cars, I recommend that people look, rather than to the hybrids, that they look to the new line of common rail diesels that are coming out all over the world. They get almost as good mileage as the hybrid cars, but the hybrids have this very expensive battery pack that has to replace just about the time your warranty is up. So the only reason that I would buy a hybrid car is if you do the standard American thing of trading a car in after a few years before the warranty is up. If you're going to take that thing out of warranty, you're going to be stuck with the $10,000 to $12,000 cost of replacing the battery pack at some time.
So you're recommending the diesel then?
Yes, these new high-mileage diesels are so efficient. They will get 40 to 50 miles per gallon and over 60 if you use the driving techniques that I just mentioned.
All right. Well, our guest has been Senator Joel Skelton. Joel, quickly, how do people get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, worldaffairsbrief.com. If they'd like a sample issue of the World Affairs Brief, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com.
That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. Sydney, I go there every day, and you should too. Hang on for just a moment, please. Well, Joel, I got so involved listening to what you had to say, I almost forgot to get that website out. But hopefully you'll get some response. Anyway, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, it's not so bad really to worry about, you think, well, that's not a problem with a hybrid. I can always trade it in and get a new car. But someday there'll be a major crisis of war and destruction in this nation. It'll not permit us to trade in our overly complex vehicles for more maintainable cars. We'll be stuck with what we have. So from a survival perspective, I still recommend one buy one of the new super high mileage diesels. The common rail diesels are coming out all across the board. And I've listed in today's World Affairs Brief all of the, virtually every car company in the world now has a common rail diesel, including American car companies. Although most of those diesels are relegated to their big trucks, and they don't get that good of mileage just because they're so big and heavy and built for power. But Volkswagen and Mercedes and BMW and Toyota and Kia, they all have common rail diesels coming out this year or next. This is the wave of the future. And I also recommend that people get manual transmissions if they can learn to drive a manual transmission to get tremendous more mileage with a manual over an automatic, mostly because you can actually shift at lower speeds than what an automatic will do. And as long as you don't put a lot of accelerator on your engine so that you lug the engine, this will do it harm. You just keep light pressure on the engine. You can slowly accelerate, not going over 1,800 RPMs, and you'll be getting 30 to 40 miles per gallon, even in town. I've proved that with my own cars. I like manual transmissions, too, because you can pop start the car if your battery runs dead. A lot of advantages there. Electric vehicles also offer some promise in the future, but they're not here yet because of the technology.
All right, fine. Well, we've got just about 30 seconds for you to wrap up the program.
It's also important, I think, to do a little fuel storage. It's important because of the shortages that are coming that you keep some fuel around so that you'll always be able to drive or run a generator. This is going to become a scarce commodity someday. So I'm encouraging people to prepare and try to adapt as best they can to the prices that we're dealing with.
Well, we have nothing we can do. We should have begun saving a long time ago, putting fuel aside. But anyway, God bless you. Thanks very much, Joel. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest has been Joel Skelton from World Affairs Brief. And heed what he has to say. Joel spent a lot of his time over the last 30 years or so preparing people for the difficult times that lie ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Joel Skelton. Let me simply point out that I think we're in for some very difficult times. I really do believe that the people, the powers that be, do intend to expand the war in the Middle East. Of course, you'd say from a logical point of view, it doesn't make any sense. We can't afford it. Our military certainly is unprepared for it. We don't have the military personnel. But understand, we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people who have a different worldview. And it doesn't matter that this would bankrupt America. There are people who want to bankrupt America and impoverish our people and lower our living standards. If you don't believe that, you need to read the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. You need to read the Earth Charter and understand there are people out there in positions of power who have an entirely different worldview. What can we do? Well, of course, we can try to get people to listen to Radio Liberty and to understand what's going on. But, of course, you should be making physical preparations for what lies ahead. And let me suggest, if you have not yet got our DVD entitled Sheltering in Place, it tells you what to do with your home. If there's a nuclear, biological, or chemical attack, what would you do? Well, if you're going to get duct tape and plastic, you're going to suffocate, that's for sure. You need to know now what to do, and this is a very simple a DVD. We think it's important. We have a four-tape set on certainly civil defense, something that at one time was practiced in America but has been put aside because, of course, the preparations are made for the elite. There are certainly are centers all over America, underground centers, where the elite will be, but they're not making any preparations for the average American because there's just too many Americans. And after all, of course, all these people stay on here. How are we going to fund Social Security? How are we going to fund Medicare? If we didn't have so many people, we wouldn't have all the problems, would we? And there really are people that really believe there are too many people in the world. If you never read the writings of Jacques Cousteau, who in the November 1991 UNESCO Curia talked about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. And if you doubt that, of course, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the pages from the UNESCO Courier. We'll send them to you. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who have an entirely different worldview. So we suggest, of course, you get our DVD, Sheltering in Place, our four-tape set on civilian defense. You get the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, originally put out by the government. They don't put that out anymore, but it's been republished by one of our friends. Nuclear War Survival Skills, and then, of course, the book, the Making the Best of Basics. What do you do if you don't have all the luxuries that we have? How do you survive? Well, this is how your grandparents survived and your great-grandparents survived. A lot of great advice in that. And then, of course, if you haven't laid in your water filter so that you can filter water, why, of course, you need a Berkey water filter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't laid in a supply of, you know, long-term storage food, it's like a catalog, give us a call. We'll send you one free of charge. But if you have a catalog, do not put off, you know, getting your arrangements made because you don't know what's going to happen. And what happens if you go to the store and there's nothing there? Oh, you say it couldn't happen in America, and I'd like to say, why not? If God is just, he is going to bring his judgment on this country. Because, of course, not what our people have done is what our people have not done. How they've not had the courage to stand up and take a stand because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And there really are sinister and evil spiritual forces out there guiding things. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, heard our talk on the forbidden secret and got the syllabus that goes with that, or the talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that, or our material on concentration camps. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are concentration camps in America. Many of them are old military camps. They just changed the barbed wire instead of to keep people out, to keep them inside. What are they planning on? Well, you need to get our material on the amazing clips. You'll actually hear it all laid out in Congress. But, of course, never released to the American people. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Pardon me, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
IRN USA Radio News. I'm Greg Moore. Space Shuttle Discovery is in good shape as it sits on the launch pad poised to blast off Saturday afternoon. Mission managers say there are no technical problems and the weather forecast looks good. Ground crews have packed the